Hey, Johnny, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you, John?
Hey, do you know what we need right now?
An ice cream cone?
That does sound good. But in addition to that, did you know that we're looking for someone to be a part of the Talk About That podcast team?
Yes, I do know that.
Well, we're looking for someone who has interest in or experience in marketing, social media, and working to help us build the platform of the podcast to reach more people.
That would be great. We need more people.
It would be amazing. So if you're out there and that kind of falls inside of your purview and experience, then just send an email over to me at john@johndriver.com and let's set up some time to talk about whether or not you might be a part of the Talk About That podcast team.
Do it. Today on Talk About That, it's a snowpocalypse. John hurts himself sledding and has no butt. Meanwhile, I try adopting a lunchroom philosophy to creativity rather than always trying to win over my critics. Also, a conversation about the illusion of safety and how taking no risks is the biggest risk of all. Today's episode is not sponsored by Beaded Chains, stopping you from stealing pens at your bank since 1938. It's showtime.
Walking in a winter wonderland, Johnny. Let's talk about that.
We really are. It's snow days.
For Nashvillians, like, this is the snow apocalypse.
5 inches or so?
It was a lot.
It's crippling to our city. People don't understand that live up north. They'd laugh at us, but we have one truck.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's mine.
It's Seth Wharton.
They're like, hey, John, could you get your truck?
Seth's out there stacking hundreds.
Let me tell you something.
Because he's got the snowplow attachment.
Seth is like the right kind of cautionary tale because he was ready for this. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was one of the wise virgins from the Bible whose lamps had their oil filled for when the bridegroom did cometh.
That's a real stretch there. I love a good virgin parable. I could relate for much of my life. It's like, well, it paid off for these virgins. Maybe I'll be okay, too. And that was, I was okay. It's worked out pretty great.
Worked out pretty great.
How's things going with you? I'm still trying to lose this holiday weight, and it's last Valentine's Day. That's the holiday. That's the sad part. It's a lot. It's a snowball effect.
Yeah, I did really well to start the week, and I did okay. Like, we see snow days and getting snowed in and stuff. It really throws me off.
Well, why wouldn't it? You give yourself permission to just because what are you gonna do? Go run in the ice? You've seen that video, by the way, right? The famous viral video from years ago, where these newscasters are interviewing people who are out jogging in the snow. They're like, it's actually great. It packs down nice and it's good traction and, you know, it's not bad at all. And then they take off jogging and this woman just eats it. And the camera catches all of it.
Nice.
And you just have a hard time not, what is that called? Like Schadenfreude? When somebody's like, you glory in someone else's like downfall or whatever. Yeah. You get like this little endorphin rush. But it's she kind of got her comeuppance because she was like, yeah, we're out here running in the snow. We're awesome. We're fit. And then it's like, no, you're not. You're in traction. But anyway, so you give yourself permission because you're like, I can't go run in the snow. So what I'll do is eat snow cream.
Well, that's the thing. Why it has to be both extremes, I don't know. Like, okay, how about if I'm not going to go out and exercise in this,
right?
I could go to the treadmill, which I did one day.
Yeah, I hate the treadmill.
I hate the treadmill too, but I did it on Monday. Then Tuesday, I got up and ran at like 7 a.m. in like 20 degree weather. So before the snow came.
Before the snow.
And it was great. The first mile, you're freezing.
Right.
And then you feel great.
Yeah.
But everything's gone numb probably is why. But no, your body heat, you know. Like,
is that? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because you've generated
heat. I ran a couple of miles for the first time in a while, and my legs, I was very aware of my legs the next day.
Oh, yeah.
My legs were like, we don't do this.
Yeah, mine
what
too.
What are you doing to me?
I was walking, because that was a Tuesday.
It's like a newborn deer getting up. You're just, it's like, you know when you're in line in school? And you're in the lunch line, and somebody comes up behind you and gives you that thing where they put their knee into your knee, and you just go, whoop. It's that sensation of, like, I don't know how to walk downstairs anymore.
My brother would do that to me all the time. Kind of just take out the knee pit on the back
who
there.
Who are these people?
Yeah.
I like to do a Venn diagram of, like, who those people grow up to be. You know, like, if you're that guy.
I mean, he's a successful civil engineer, so I don't.
Well, there's those jokes people too, like boys who run around like kicking each other in the balls all the time.
Yeah.
When you're in junior high.
Right.
Like, who are these monsters?
What are they today?
Who are they? They're politicians probably. The running things. Just stop it.
No, I felt it because it was a Tuesday morning, so we had staff meeting. And so when I walked up the steps, that's the thing. I'm like, I'm great. I'm feeling great. I ran this morning. And then I hit the steps. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Like, it's funny how your body doesn't tell you until you hit certain things, which speaking of.
Yeah.
So today, so my daughter's best friend came. We knew the snow was coming. She came home with us Wednesday night, which is great. So she stayed.
Oh, she's just stranded with you.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday night with us was amazing.
Snow in, sleepover.
So they're playing like crazy, staying up late.
Did they go out into the snow?
Oh, yeah.
I just didn't have no desire.
They were in the snow as much until they're, you know, until they get just numb.
Yeah.
And then they'd come in and, you know, watch. And, I mean, it was great. It was so much fun. It was like you look at kids and go, well, that's a memory, a fun time, you know.
It's for Tennessee. Like Middle Tennessee, we just don't get, we get one or two snows a year. Never this much snow.
No.
So this actually stuck around for a couple of days. You could make a snowman. You could do your thing. A neighbor of mine made a T-Rex in their yard.
Oh, wow.
Like a little snow T-Rex.
That's a lot of
effort. Yeah, it was a lot of creativity.
I
don't think it was actual size, but it wasn't to scale.
No, I could maybe stack the three.
Yeah.
You know, balls on top of each other to make a snowman. But I can't.
Maybe they did that, then they crafted a T-Rex out of that. Anyway.
Well, today, then we were meeting up with her parents to drop her off because we have volleyball tomorrow in Kentucky. So we were meeting up to drop her off, and we thought we'd sled here at the church. There's a few hills.
Yeah.
And so the first hill, I was like, all right, guys, I'll try it first. So I get the sled. And I just do what I would always do. Like, you know, I kind of jump down head first.
Oh, yeah.
And then I suddenly...
Let me guess. You just sunk in and you didn't go anywhere.
No, I went.
Oh, you did?
But apparently I jumped thinking that I'm 20 years younger still.
Oh, right.
And like, you know, I've broken my ribs before basketball. And I have like arthritis in my ribs now. Like they hurt all the time and they've been bruised a bunch, you know, and they're broken in a basketball injury.
Arthritic ribs.
It's crazy.
Never heard of that.
And so like I was like, oh, my ribs, you know, and I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, I just slid down a hill.
Yeah.
And
I would never go down head first like that.
And I felt
fine. What are you, Pete Rose? What are you doing? You're just diving in?
Well, and so I thought I was okay. So we had to go to the grocery store. We got home, and something fell out of my hand while I had an armful of groceries, and I went to reach down and pick it up. And apparently that's the motion.
Oh, yeah.
That proves to me, much like walking up the steps, that's the motion that was like, it felt like someone stabbed me right in my side.
Your rib just moves and pokes your lung.
So here's the thing. I won't be picking up anything off the ground for a few days.
Yeah, just save your life energy. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that's an age thing. You know what? Why do I shame myself about it? Why don't I say, no, that's an athletic injury.
That's why you have children anyway.
Why is that?
So they'll pick things up for you.
Oh, Johnny, you don't know anything about being a parent, do you? If you have kids, the days of having kids that they make your life easier by working on the farm or something, I'm sure there's some great parents listening who that's their life.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we live in such a 21st century reality. True. It's like,
well, everything's child, like you hear these stories about people, the home being like child centered, whereas it used to be parent centered, or it used to be the adults were the thing, and the children kind of, you're going to work around me. And now it's like, we'll work around you, your volleyball schedule, et cetera.
It's hard.
Just using that as a, I'm not saying you, I'm just just as an example, if someone's life were dominated by their daughter's volleyball schedule.
Right.
Like a random person, person.
Right, a person, yeah. No, and the funny thing is when she's in trouble, I tell her, now you know that there's a family here of people, and that this does not revolve around you, and we all live to serve one another.
Uh-huh.
Now, you go get in the bath while I finish doing all the dishes and put away the dinner that I made for you so we can be ready to leave for the volleyball practice that's free. Like, you can't. You're doing everything for them. But.
Dude, I went to high school with a guy, and we reconnected on Facebook a couple of years ago, and I saw, you ever do that where you become friends with somebody again, and then you go look at all their old posts to see, like, all right, what kind of whack job are they a little bit? Or what kind of, or if they have kids, whatever, you're stalking them.
What kind of whack jobs are their kids?
Exactly. But he kind of is what I thought he would be. He's an ex-Marine, and he's always been this, like, live off the land kind of a guy.
Uh-huh.
And I knew that he would kind of grow up to be that guy. And sure enough, he lives in Kentucky, and he has some cabin or something. And all that said, he had this post about how his kid, I think it's 10-year-old boy, had left their clothes on the floor.
Yeah.
And he was like, he knows what the rule is, so he'll be hand washing those tonight. So that was his thing. Oh. So if you throw clothes on the floor, like, here's your extra chore. This is what you're going to have to do. And I was like, wow.
This is so sad. We talked about this before, but it's worth mentioning. Like, there are times I'll go like, you're about to lose your phone for a month.
Yeah.
And then back of my mind, I'm going, I couldn't take that.
Yeah, that would be punishing
like,
yourself.
I can't then reach her when I need to
reach
her. It's
just so funny, like, you're about to lose your smartphone for a month is a new, like...
It is.
Tim Hawkins used to have a bit about that when we were on the... This is like years ago. It's like 2012. He used to have this joke. And so now it's almost like just... I don't even know if it would even get a big laugh now. But back then he goes, it's amazing how our threats to our kids have gotten different. He goes, I'll say to my kid, I'll scream to her, you come upstairs when I text you. It's just funny to me.
Yeah.
I will unfriend you, you know, or whatever.
No, it's very, I was talking to my father-in-law the other day, and he was telling, because we're talking about Christmas presents, they got Greg, my brother-in-law, when he was young, they got him a three-wheeler.
Yeah. Okay,
so they don't even make three-wheelers anymore, because they just tipped over
all the time.
Yeah. And so,
but regular ATVs too. It's because they go straight up hills with them, and then you're like, oh, this thing's going to come back on me and break my neck. Yeah.
So he said, I told Greg, look, you wear a helmet.
Yeah.
And if I see you on the three wheeler one time,
oh boy,
without the helmet, then that day I will go sell the three wheeler and it'll be gone.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what? He never one time rode the three wheeler without a helmet that I know of.
Wow.
And I was like, but see, in my experience, my kid is going to make a mistake.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to have to follow through on that, which is fine. I do.
But I really like the three-wheeler.
I try to make idle threats, yeah. But I just go, man, that, then I go also, wow, that worked. And so it sounds like, again, guys, as parents,
yeah,
I don't think that we're complete pushovers. I mean, we have boundaries and all those things. It's one of those.
Sometimes you make a threat and you hope they don't call your bluff.
Oh, absolutely. You're like, man, I don't, because in truth, I do want them to have, I want her to have good things, not like nice things. I want her to have good experiences.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to take things away. I mean, this is almost the heart of God in that respect. I think we kind of assume God wants to take away the things that we enjoy. And I think in the end,
God,
like,
doesn't want to sell your three wheeler.
Like, guys, he doesn't.
There's your next book.
He wants you to ride that three wheeler. God the Father, God
the
Son.
That's what I was going to say. It's a trinity. It's a trinity. Yeah,
some of y'all stop making three-wheelers. You've added a fourth wheel. Stop being God's fourth wheel.
Every metaphor has its limits, I guess, but we found ours.
And so, I don't know, man. It's like a weird, and I'm not, and also when you have an only, like, I'm her dad.
Yeah.
And I'm also, this is weird, I don't mean this like I'm her friend in that I'm a peer, but there's a lot of times that if she's going to have fun in the house, it's got to be with me or Laura.
Yeah.
Like there's no one else there, you know? And so we are willing to she got these lights for Christmas from her grandma and they stick to the wall.
Yeah.
So like,
oh no, my money's got some too. Yeah. What's going on with people lighting up their rooms?
Let me tell you something. So
every teenage girl wants to light up the room and they want to be able to control them LED style and all this.
2 50-foot rolls.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was on a ladder in the bonus room, in the entire bonus room, to the crease up to the ceiling, all the way down, you know, the drywall edges and all the things. I mean, who else is going to do that, you know, and who else is going to enjoy it with her? So, I mean, there's like a friendliness.
You hire an installer. Come on in.
That'd be funny.
Go on Angie's List.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who installs these LED?
Does anyone know how to pull this backing off this sticky tape?
100 feet. Look at you. I think I got my niece like 25 feet. You can't hide money, bro.
I didn't get it. Her grandma got it for me.
Oh.
Yeah.
La-di-da. So.
They were actually really cheap.
Mama D for the win.
Turns out you're really cheap because...
Yeah. No, but I'm serious. Like, she had an Amazon wish list or whatever for Christmas. And I swear to you, like 10 out of 20 things were some kind of lighting for her room. Neon this and, you know, with dimmer switches. And I'm just like, do y'all have lights in her room? What's going on?
Yeah,
girl?
Same thing.
She can't see.
She got a projector thing too.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing.
Oh, it projects
thing.
On the ceiling and
projects
makes little shapes.
Like, stars and different shapes, almost like nebulae, you know,
right?
Around
the
room.
Right, and he says one of those too.
Yeah, and it's really cool.
Like little constellations.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to our drive-in that was supposed to come to Nashville? You remember this idea?
There's one in Lebanon.
No, there was supposed to be a drive. It was going to be called a drive-in, but literally it was like this self-contained, like, biosphere thing that you drive into. And it's like a planetarium that looks like the night sky. And you sit in, like, classic cars on, like, AstroTurf, and you watch a movie. And it was going to be called, like, Blue Moon Drive-In or August Moon. Dolly Parton was involved in it.
Yeah. I don't know anything. I don't know.
Maybe it's a fever dream I had. But I swear to you, this is the thing.
Where was it going to be?
I want to say it was going to be Nashville. And now I think they've...
Could you be more specific?
I think that I've heard that it's going to be Pigeon Forge now.
Oh.
Yeah. Because I don't know why.
Pigeon Forge.
Right. I'm sorry.
I mean, we got a Top Golf here now.
Right.
Which we never go to.
No, we don't, John. It doesn't have a planetarium, though.
He suddenly blames me for
just
that.
Just has dumb old real stars.
Ugh.
Who needs the trouble of that?
Yeah. You've been playing golf a lot.
No. I've played one time this year.
No, that's not true.
One time.
This year. Sorry. It's only January.
No, I'm saying this past season of 2021, I played one time.
You talked about playing all the time.
No. You're thinking of 2020. I played some in 2020.
Oh. Well, I lost
2021, I mostly rode my bike. Whenever it was a nice day out, I would always go ride my dumb bike.
I mean, you like your bike.
I do.
Do you know we got a Peloton?
What?
Yeah.
What? Speaking of can't hide money.
A used Peloton.
You're so funny. I don't care. Enjoy your Peloton.
I'm not using it. Laura loves it.
They're great.
I can't. I'm telling you, man.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be personal on the podcast.
John, that's all we do.
But I don't have a butt.
What does that have to do with anything?
Bike seats really, like, I have no padding. Like, it's painful. So it's super painful.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So I just don't do a lot of biking in that respect.
Hmm.
So, sorry, guys. But Peloton, not a sponsor. But she loves it. So, I mean, they can be a sponsor.
You get those padded pants, though, the big butt pants.
Maybe. It'd be nice. I mean, I did run the treadmill, and then I went and ran. I loved running. I told you, the first mile, very much cold. Then great. Mm-hmm. The next two. And when I stopped then, I kind of walk, you know, that mile and a half home praying and stuff. And I was freezing. Like, that was the problem. Now you're sweaty and you come down off of it and then the wind. So I'm working on like maybe
call an Uber.
I think I'm going to tie like this raincoat thing that kind of holds the heat in. It's real thin around my waist for running. So it doesn't get all sweaty, and then put it on to kind of, you know, trap all the escaping heat on the walk home.
Remember people used to sell us that whole thing about, like, wearing a head covering of any kind because, like, all the heat escapes from your body. 80% of your body heat escapes through your head.
I believe
like, it's
that.
A total myth. It's a total myth.
Dude,
I've read about it. It's a total, like, that's like, you know, going outside with a wet head, you'll catch cold. Like, it's a whole, like, that's just a thing.
Says the 40-whatever-year-old with a full head of hair. Listen, I don't want to hear about it. You don't know what it's like. My head gets cold in a restaurant in the dead of summer. You know, you're just walking around with that.
You cold
hair is wasted on people like you. You're not even grateful for it.
I am grateful. I'm very grateful. Yeah.
You know, I'm so grateful I don't look like you. That's what he's saying.
I lamented I had no hair until I met the man who had no head. Is that the saying?
Was that Sophocles? That's so funny.
Who wrote The Headless Horseman? What was that guy's name?
Dang it. There's no way
to
know.
Hold on. Irving.
Washington Irving?
Washington Irving.
Was
him. John.
Gosh, there's no. Now someone's really screaming if that's not who it is.
Who wrote The Headless Horseman? Thomas Mayne Reed.
You were way off.
Where did I get Washington Irving?
Why don't you ask it, what did Washington Irving write?
What did Washington Irving write? Hold on. Oh, it thinks I'm saying a name, Washington Irving Wright. Siri.
One job.
Is Washington Irving even a guy?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. We need a producer.
No, this is great. You can't get past this authenticity. This is...
I don't think it's Washington Irving. I'm thinking of somebody else.
George Washington. Oh, my goodness. I want to know how many of our listeners, number one, how many of them like the show Hamilton?
The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, I thought that was The Headless Horseman.
I thought it was, too. Was there, like, another?
Is Sleepy Hollow not the guy who had the horrible headless. He was holding a lantern in the.
I don't do a lot of.
Yeah, I'm we were right. Washington Irving. Okay. Anyway. Wow. Oh, no, just like our lives.
Boy, isn't it though, guys? Don't lose your head over the. Anyway, I want to know how many of our listeners actually like the show Hamilton because you haven't watched it yet.
No.
Because you have no soul.
I'm going to wait until it's just whatever. It's basically almost. He's almost canceled now, right? People, there's been backlash and backlash to the backlash.
There's no.
Yeah, because of appropriation
it's
and etc.
It's not being canceled. Yeah. It's bigger than people, ever.
Twitter has had their way with him a little bit, but it's.
Twitter,
fine.
Johnny, is not.
I know it's successful.
It really is.
Yeah,
like,
it's fine.
I was meeting with the marketing people at the publisher yesterday. And they were like, we would think we would take this. She said the same words you just said. You know, she said, I think we would take this part to Twitter and this part to Instagram and this part to LinkedIn. And I said, I'm telling you, my interaction on Instagram is so much higher than Twitter. And she said, yeah, Twitter's a cesspool, but there's still. And then she said, but there's still a bunch of pastors on there. And I was like, what does it say that a bunch of pastors are in the cesspool?
They're on there like fighting about, political things and. Theo bros, that's the big thing now, is like people who correct each other's theology constantly on there.
Yeah.
They just on here. They're like. On there talking about, you baptize infants? Well, you know you're going to hell.
Right.
Whatever that kind. That's their big, like they get up every day and like make their coffee and like they can't wait to tell you that you're wrong about whatever.
The watchdogs.
Yeah. Gatekeepers.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the Oscar Martinez's of the, well, actually, all the actuallys, so, which we will post this podcast on Twitter.
How dare you besmirch Oscar Martinez?
That's, what are you looking up now?
I'm looking up that, the thing I was going to read about, from Joni Mitchell.
Oh.
Today.
Do you have it?
I have it.
Right now?
Yeah. It's ready, John.
This was a beautiful transition.
Don't you think?
Pros.
Well, It's not a beautiful transition, but I've been wanting to talk about this for 3 or 4 episodes, and I just keep forgetting to come back to it because we just kind of move on and we do our own pace is or whatever, and that's fine. But anyway, I was a big Joni Mitchell fan, who's a folk singer from the 70s. But she had this article about monogamy, and I thought it was interesting. She had this, somebody interviewed her and was talking about, if she was in a relationship or whatever, and she said, this is kind of interesting, and take this one of those things like spit out the seeds kind of a thing. Because I've only skimmed this. This is, I don't know if I've learned anything yet, but I did learn how to have a happy home. But I consider myself fortunate in that regard because I could have rolled right by it. Everyone has a superficial side and a deep side, but this culture doesn't place much value on depth. We don't have shamans or soothsayers, and depth isn't encouraged or understood. Surrounded by this shallow, glossy society, we develop a shallow side too, and we become attracted to fluff. Twitter. Anyway. See the segue? That's reflected in the fact this culture sets up an addiction to romance based on insecurity, the uncertainty of whether or not you're truly united with the object of your obsession is the rush people get hooked on. I've seen this pattern so much in myself and my friends, and some people never get off that line. But along with developing my superficial side, I always nurtured a deeper longing so that even when I was falling into the trap of that other kind of love, I was hip to what I was doing. I recently read an article in Esquire called The End of Sex that said something that struck me as very true. It said, if you want endless repetition, see a lot of different people. If you want infinite, this is my favorite part. If you want infinite variety, stay with one. What happens is when you date, you run all your best moves and tell all your best stories. And in a way, that routine is a method for falling in love with yourself over and over.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
But you can't do that with a long-time mate because he knows all that old material. With a long relationship, things die, then are rekindled, and that shared process of rebirth deepens the love. It's hard work, though, and a lot of people run at the first sign of trouble. You're with this person, and suddenly you look like an a-hole to them, or they look like one to you. It's unpleasant, but if you can get through it, you can get closer, and you can learn a way of loving that's different from the neurotic love enshrined in movies. It's warmer and has more padding to it. I just like the idea of, like, you run all your best moves if you have to date a bunch of other people, but when you're with one person, they know you. Yeah. And so you have to, like, the mask has to eventually come off, and then you get real, and it either goes really deep or you run, which is why we see so much divorce or whatever. And some people just aren't compatible or whatever, and I get that, and there's abusive. There's always a reason. I'm just saying there's always outliers, and there's reasons and exceptions. But I do think it's interesting that I just never heard it put quite that way.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
The idea that we find a way to fall in love with ourselves.
Yeah.
If we're not careful, we're mm-hmm. just falling in love with this weird version of our ego.
Yeah.
When we just go person to person to person. But when we stay with one person, the act has to eventually give way to reality.
Right. And I like the idea of the something dies and something's reborn. I mean, I can't even compare myself to my 20-year-old self. Like, I don't even know. I do not seem like the same person. And that's good. I mean, there's growth there. You weren't here last Sunday, but I talked about, it's so crazy you'd say that, because I talked about in the message this, because I basically talk about New Year's Scrooges. There's more New Year's Scrooges than Christmas Scrooges. We are all kind of like, oh, well, let's not make a resolution because we never. And it's like this actually, there is something in the sequence of life. This is an opportunity to reevaluate. And you're not foolish for looking at your disciplines or looking at your physical health or looking at your relationships and deciding this is a moment to shore things up.
Yeah, I think we mistake that cynicism for depth.
Right.
We're like, oh, because I'm aware that this is all BS around me, that makes me a better person than someone who's idealistic. It's like, no, you're just a jerk.
Well, and
you've given up.
Yeah, restarting. You got to have moments in life where you reevaluate and restart. I mean, that's why we have anniversaries or why we have all kinds of things that you.
I want both. I want like the wisdom to like know that like, yeah, there's a chance that I'm not going to stick to this run 3 miles every day. And also, I want to have the courage to try it anyway.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I talked about courage. Like, it takes courage to live in our world at all right now, to, like, I guess, show up.
Yeah.
It takes courage to show up today.
Right.
In the world. To go, whether that's in faith, whether I'm going to hope again. It takes courage to hope again when you've been disappointed. And the cynicism sets in, and I talked about that. Christian cynics are more rampant than any other kind, in my opinion, that we're the first ones to tear every single thing down and to pull the rug out before anyone would stand on it so that we don't get hurt again.
Yeah.
And there's like this, because isn't it foolish to keep hoping? I was like, but guys, Christianity is built upon continuing to hope. Like, it always leads to continuing to hope. And that's what Jesus establishes in us. So it will feel foolish, but it's not foolish according to the boundaries and the paradigms of the faith that we're brought into. But I talked about this idea that, so this is my dark place. I'm redoing some spiritual disciplines. And part of me who's gotten away from a works-based mindset and realizes God doesn't love me based upon how much I pray today or how much I read today and all those things, which is not that I ever thought God loved me on that, but God liked me or my closeness to him. So the truth is, though, when I don't pray or read, I do feel a distance, and mm-hmm. there's a reality there. And I begin to kind of get dark where I was like for a few days there, kind of pondering the new thing. And it was almost like, look, if this God thing is so real, this is as raw as I could say it. If this God thing is so real, why would it require me to have to make sure I get up and run at 7 a.m. to pray or read this scripture? Like, I begin to get super cynical for a moment about it, because I don't want it to depend upon me. I don't mm-hmm. believe that anymore. I know it doesn't. I preach that it doesn't. So why did I feel this? And I felt like that I had this nudge inside one day of, John, every other relationship in your life works the same way. Your relationships are reflective of the truth that you're struggling with. I'm paraphrasing that nudge. Yeah. And in my own marriage, if I decide to stop talking to my wife, stop communicating, stop confessing when we make a mistake, stop working it out, whatever, I will feel a distance.
Right.
And then I can do exactly what I was feeling with this faith thing. And I see people do as a pastor all the time in marriage. And like you said, the boundaries here, I'm not talking about abuse. I'm not talking about moments where you need to get away. Okay. I'm talking about like no such thing as normal, but in a regular situation of, hey, we just, having a tense day, together, or we're sick of each other's, idiosyncrasies over time. And people then begin to rewrite history and truth for themselves. And when they get close to leaving a marriage, I hear this all the time. I don't think we really loved each other in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And I said to the congregation, I said, guys, I've done over 50 weddings and I've never married anyone who didn't love each other on that day.
Yeah.
Like, I've never married anyone who didn't, like, genuinely love each other on that day. the deal is there's distance or there's tension or there's circumstances, some valid, some that could have been overcome that weren't. And when you begin to feel that distance and you think, I don't need to engage because this should just be like you, I love how she said that. We just think this should just remain almost accidental, organic, just constantly happening to us and not us really doing something to affect it. Like if I have to affect it, it starts to feel disingenuous. Now it feels like I'm having to put so much into this. If it was real love, it would just be happening all the time.
Yeah.
And real love also requires you to put something into it.
Uh-huh.
Even if it draws you in a way in the beginning that didn't require as much of you, real love will require more and more of you as you grow closer and closer. And that's what I felt with God. Like, hey, just because you need to pray and we feel distant, and you can try to convince yourself that this faith thing's not real if you want to, but all relationships have that same pattern. Or you could recognize that this is relational, and that's why. And secondly, I'm not engaging God. He's already engaged me. I'm responding.
Yeah.
If I believe the gospel, I don't wake up any morning without him having already engaged me, whether it's through the sunrise, the Bible says. I mean, there's so many things he's engaging. If I remember that and believe that, then I'm not responding out of like me taking over to make faith work. I'm actually returning to something that he's giving to me, but having to do something or choosing to do something doesn't mean it's not real. It doesn't mean it's not true, just like it's not true for any of us. So it was a fascinating kind of thought to me.
I like how Laura is God in that analogy.
So she probably likes it too.
Just like my relationship with Laura. Laura's God here. And when I don't speak with her, she becomes angry with me.
Well, that's the same thing. If I don't spend time.
She can smite me.
She probably really could smite me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mess with her.
No.
No. Laura's a two, which is the helper. And a two has, you have two wings, Johnny, and you have two Enneagram paths.
Helpers smite people? I'm confused by the Enneagram.
That's the point. That's what I'm getting. So the two is the helper, man, always there for what you need. You know? But she has a path, and under certain, it can go positively or negatively, either to a four or an eight. And an eight is the one who will smite you.
Okay.
And so when she's on her eight path, she's strong, you know, and the eight path can be good and bad. I mean, sometimes we need her strength.
Yeah.
Like she'll walk into a situation and boom, she can handle it. And we needed that strength. So we all have that. Like my paths go to, three and nine. Yeah. And so three is more of my strong sort of, the nine is the one who sees all sides and is just wants to keep the peace, a peaceful accommodator. While the three is more like the one who wants to achieve and wants to sort of win the room over. And so for me, if I get into my three path, it could be positive or negative.
Yeah.
I can go out and hang out with people and I can actually be the life of the party a little bit, even though I'm an introvert, but that's when I'm on that path. Or I can like try to win everybody over to a negative extent, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not good. So, then
I don't know. And I wonder what kind of person I would have become had I never gotten into stand up. Cause I think it's altered my personality. Do you think my personality has changed since I don't? You just think I stepped into a thing and it just happens to be.
I think that having the professional side of comedy, my take, all it did was is round out and develop some areas of your life now that you have to hold up for yourself in the professional world.
Yeah.
Whether it be the management, the agency, the representation, the branding, the travel, you had to put systems in place to make all that work that you didn't always have before because those things weren't required of you. You had them when you worked at Agape.
Yeah.
In a different way. You would develop. So I saw the managerial admin side of you.
Right. When I ran the group home ministry. Yeah, I don't know. I wonder, like, personality-wise, because when I hear somebody talk about how they feel like a people pleaser or they feel like they have to win a room over, I'm like, that's my job.
Yeah.
So how could I ever conquer that as an addiction or whatever you would call it?
Sure.
If you call it an unsettling or unhealthy pattern, well, if I just go, well, I don't care if I please them or not tonight, it's like, well, good luck.
Right.
You know? There's a name for comedians that don't please the audience.
Yeah.
They're called out of work comedians.
No, it's the same kind of thing with writing. I mean, if I don't care about the audience at all,
and
I write something no one wants to read, then I could be a purist about it, but it still is going to be hard to continue to do that if you want to make a career out of it.
I started thinking the other day about my opinion of ourselves. We talk about ego, and a little bit in that Joni Eric Joni Mitchell article. She talks a little about your ego in a relationship and how you can see yourself as a series of like moves and stories and how it can mess you up. And when I think about ego in like showbiz or what you do, or even like preachers have egos if they're honest with themselves, because you're walking into a room and you're almost like floating above yourself and envisioning what others think of you.
Yeah.
If you're not careful, like it's a persona.
I find it all the time.
Social media has made everyone, it's super exaggerated that sense of ourselves. And it's odd. And I'm trying to like figure out how to defeat that thing, or at least like control it, harness it enough to where it doesn't dominate, you know, and change the trajectory in a bad way of my life.
I have so many things I feel like I can access as a speaker that are interests to me, or things that I can fit into my communication style. That's the hard part. Some of this is good, and this is back to, I want to get back to your idea about how do I ever recover from that in a second, but some of this is just, is good. Like, if I know I have, if there is a bunch of comedians in the room, I'm just not going to be stuffy the whole time.
Yeah.
I also don't need to try to be a comedian. Like, I need to find a way where I'm lighthearted enough to reach them, or silly enough without trying to, but I am aware if they're there.
Yeah.
Like I don't like that. Like, if I meet a new person before I preach and they seemed like they were sort of intellectually wired for engagement of faith issues, then I know I get this one chance to make an impression for us as a church that, hey, you know, there's a lot of things we're going to do. One of them we can do is that. And I might find myself, you know,
trying to be extra smart.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like I find myself using bigger words or whatever, but
I've done that.
Yeah. I'm thinking to myself though, hey, you know, show that side of us. It's not even just of me. Show that side of us, because I'm representing what our church can offer them. And you only get one shot with it mostly. So, you know.
Yeah, it's weird because that's not the same thing that I'm thinking. I'm almost thinking like opposition. Like, you can fall into weird opposition mindset when you create content if you're not careful. Like, I guess I better go make this thing, or otherwise people will forget about me. Or when I go to make something, if I think it's funny, I immediately go, but is this imaginary group of comedians that I want to be liked by, are they going to think it's hacky?
Right.
Instead of going, like, what I'm trying to do, and this is something I'm really trying to make a New Year's thing for me, is let's say I have 1,400, I think I have 1,500 or 1,600 YouTube subscribers, which isn't huge. I mean, I don't have a huge, but it's like, it's grown slowly over the years. And I'm thinking like, okay, well, I could go, well, why isn't it 100,000? Or I could be like, I've got 1,700 people in a room waiting for me to come in and say something to them. It's almost like the lunchroom when you're just cutting up with your friends.
Yeah.
Like, somewhere along the line, I started thinking of the audience as like someone to be defeated. Like, we even say it in comedy. We say, I killed, or I ate it, or I died.
Yeah.
Like, it's a war. And they are to either be defeated, you kill them. Think about it. I mean, the mentality of it. Instead of being like, literally what I try to think of my show is like, we're at the lunchroom. I'm cutting up. I'm gonna eat all the orange peels to make you laugh.
Yeah.
And somewhere along the line, like, I need to get that mindset back into what I'm doing when I'm creating things. It's like, that's the real stuff, is like, who already likes you, make stuff for them, and then other people will be added to that number. But if you make things going, I got to prove myself to the people who don't like me, you're already way off track.
That's fascinating, because I think, I was having this conversation with Laura. I'm hiring.
By the way, I will eat orange peels anytime.
Whatever
gross thing you want to put together, I'll eat.
Just bring it
at the lunch hour.
That's what Johnny does. Even when he eats alone, it's weird.
Yeah.
I was talking to her about hiring youth pastors.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I've interviewed like 12 people now, and all these candidates. I'm very overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed by restaurant menus.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm overwhelmed, because in my mind, almost anybody can work if they work hard enough, and I see their positives. Even though I'm a negative, pessimistic guy in a lot of ways with people, it's crazy. I always think, oh, you know, anybody could do this. So I'm trying to make myself be more critical, ask a lot of harder questions than I normally would, all those things. But I told Laura, like, it's taking courage for me as a leader to make decisions right now, because I have my inner committee – that always tells me what's not going to work. And then almost everyone around me also can tell me what won't work.
Yeah.
And I have to be willing to try things. And I think maybe that fits for what you're talking about. I have to be willing to try things, and this is part of the Enneagram world, is I still hate when they say this in the Enneagram world. It's like very unnatural for me. Like, trust yourself. Like, that would actually be growth for you.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean trust in yourself. It doesn't mean stop loving God, trusting God. It doesn't mean be prideful. It means, like,
yeah,
sometimes you're crippled by this idea of you can't make the best choice, and so you don't make choices.
Or a wrong choice will be devastating.
Right.
When in actuality, it'll just be
another choice
that you just get up and try again.
Yeah, and real faith says even if you make the wrong choice, God is redirecting your steps, your path, and you learn through that.
Yeah,
and
it's amazing how immune to that I was when I started. If I look back and think of all the bad jokes I wrote when I started, and I just confidently went out and said them, and now it's like I want every joke to be a winner. And I think it's because I have something to lose now.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to lose then. But I really have nothing to lose now to either, but I perceive myself as having something to lose.
Sure.
You know, in the beginning, you're like, I just want to do this full time as a job. But now when you get a house and that house was paid for by my income as a comedian and you go, I got to keep being a big comedian. And so that means I can make less mistakes.
Yeah.
You give yourself like a tally of mistakes. If I make this big of a mistake or if I get canceled because of this opinion or whatever it is, then I won't get to do this anymore. And whereas in the beginning, you're just like, wouldn't it be awesome if we could just hang out and cut up and make jokes all day? And when it became a job, it became way too serious and way too risky. And risk is all there is. Like, when you don't take a risk, you're taking a risk. Like, by standing still. Like, us spending an hour a week doing this podcast is really a risk because think of all the things we're saying no to because we're saying yes to this.
Yeah.
And plus, we're being very vulnerable with people. These are all things. If you just took a million little clips of this and took them out of context, we could be canceled a million times.
Yeah.
But we just do it because we like doing it, and it's for the people who like it. And if you don't like it, you don't like it. But we're willing to take that risk. But there's some risks I go, I don't know. And it's really weird. It's true.
It's almost more pure because I love this podcast so much, and it's not like blown up. I mean, it does fine, but it's not like this is some career changing thing for us on a platform level.
Yeah.
But I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
And I like doing something. Now, if I'm the only one who liked it, we probably wouldn't be doing it.
That'd be extra sad.
But to know, I mean, when I talk to people and they go, the people who really listen really do, but there's something pure about that because, like you said, I have really nothing to lose here.
Yeah.
If this went away, like it's not going to kill our careers or something. Maybe it's like, and I hate to be all, you know, cliche, but like if I was in your world, man, I would go into a 75% yes mindset, you know, for a season. Like, I'm going to the next show. I'm going to tell four jokes that I'm not sure about.
Yeah.
And just, you know, out of the six, I'm not doing the math here correctly, 75%. But out of the six that I have now I'm working on, I'm going to just try it.
Right.
And if I get a laugh or I get a moan or a groan or nothing, then it'll, you know.
That's different. And I do that some. And I'm getting ready to have, there's a show I'm getting ready to do at the end of January where I was there a couple of years ago and I need to have a lot of new material. And I'm trying to really develop that put it in a blender and just see, you know, it's going into the incubator in a quick way. Whereas normally I would really workshop things. So that'll be fun. And I'm kind of excited about it, even though it's a challenge. But the thing I'm talking about is almost like when you have to develop an idea and spend money on that idea.
Yeah.
And then you go, it's easy to talk yourself out of it. Well, I don't know if it's $5,000 funny.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you just go, because it's much easier to do nothing.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to get caught in that where I'm just like, whereas in the beginning I was just like, let's get a website, let's get a blah, 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 and whatever it costs, because we're going to do this. And then somewhere along the line, like you say, it's an illusion because we're convincing ourselves that we're safe and we're not safe.
Right.
Like if the safe move was to just stand pat, that would be great, but it's so not. People forget. You know, if you stopped writing books, people will just find the next author.
Yeah.
They'll just keep moving. So you have to keep moving, and that the biggest risk is not taking those risks. And so I'm trying to make myself more brave this year.
Mm. Yeah, I was reading actually in a Devo devotional book by Tyler Zack. You guys should check him out. He is a pastor. and he writes Enneagram material that's really, really good. And so this is called, it's for sixes, called The Gospel for Loyalists. And he was quoting Ian Cron and Suzanne Stabile, and I did Ian Cron's podcast back. You guys should go check out my link tree, and there's a link to that interview with Ian Cron. And he says, Enneagram teachers Ian Cron and Suzanne Stabile say that the growth path for sixes means holding two conflicting ideas in tension, quote, that they live in a culture that's never going to let them feel safe and that they are safe.
Huh.
But the tension is there's never going to be a thing I can do to make this safe. And also I'm safe.
Yeah, you have to like be okay with the instability of the situation.
Yeah.
Like I was telling my brother that because like he runs a nonprofit and has for years and years and years. My family founded it and I was co-director of that for a while. And so I know that world. And then he kind of looks from the outside in on my world and he'll travel with me some. And he'll be like, sometimes we'll talk real numbers about what I just made at a show or what's happening in the next month or two. And I'll be like, I kind of guard some of it because I'm just like, I don't ever want to give him the idea that like, this is how it always is because it's so chaotic.
Right.
And I told him that the last trip we did, I was like, I don't, sometimes I'll go, you know, I'll look at the calendar and I'll have work all the way up to March and then there won't be anything until August. And I have to live in that tension and trust of like, well, by the time I get to February, though, March will be full or it'll be full enough for me to eat or I'll just save all my nuts for the winter and I'll ride it out for those months. If it's a COVID slowdown or whatever it is, that's why 2020 really was just a total like it messed with people's heads that do entertainment and do like if you have like a regular thing that you're like, oh, well, I make this. Well, I'll always make that or I have 100 dates a year. I'll have 100 dates a year forever. And then when it all got taken away, you're like, oh, this is like, it's not safe at all. And it was a good lesson, but it's just interesting. Like, I respect so much what he does, and I think he has this respect for what I do, but they're so different. And yeah, you have to live in that tension of it's unstable, but it's like an instability that I've learned to live with, that I go, well, this is part of the job.
Yeah.
You know, this is part of the job is like, going, I'm going to jump, and by the time I land, the net will be there. Yeah. If I just keep writing jokes, there's going to be a market for this. I hope. And if not, Home Depot's hiring.
Well, and you know, we talk about that with the changing world of people now. I mean, if you look at the job numbers, Laura and I talk about the job numbers all the time. You know, actually, unemployment is down, but hiring is also down.
Yeah.
And I was like, how is it possible for unemployment to be down, but people are having trouble hiring? And it has to do with the nature of the world changing, that they're not needing to hire as many people because they're finding these online jobs elsewhere where they can work completely remote or whatever. And it's changing the world. It's the reason we wait at a restaurant now when there's multiple tables open. And people have also figured out how little they made in those jobs.
Uh-huh.
And how hard it is to survive in this world. And right now, this world is expensive. Groceries are through the roof. You know, we're spending almost double sometimes at the grocery store. We go to Aldi right now and we'll spend crazy. $200. And that's hard to do at Aldi.
Yeah. You know? Or like eating out. It's like you just notice, you go, this meal would have been like me and Curry. Like, today we went somewhere and I was like, this would have been like $25. It was $45.
Yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
Then I realized she got 5 margaritas. So that was, I looked over and she was,
And she was like, what did you say?
She's drunk at the table. Again.
Again.
What can you do?
I'm glad we brought it to the podcast.
It is.
This is an intervention.
Well, yeah.
With a lot of
people. She's next to me right now. She got a lampshade on her head. It's unbelievable.
I thought that was a lamp.
This whole time I thought it was a lamp.
No, but it is. And you go, it's the nature of the changing world that the world will change and it's not safe. And the safety we have, and again, I hate platitudes. Like I live my life like spewing platitudes. And at this age of my life, I'm so suspicious and skeptical about platitude based faith that I almost throw out baby Jesus with the bathwater a little bit sometimes. That's where the tension now is I've deconstructed some of those things and I'm like, okay, I think I've hit some bottom and
Right.
I don't need to jackhammer through this. This is holding. This is okay. You know, same kind of thing. Like, it's okay that I need to pray every day and have a routine. Like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's a part of it in all relationships. I have something similar to that. And it's okay that the world's going to change. I can trust God. And I mean, this is as vulnerable as I can be. And I've said this before, but something about my dog drowning and the way that happened, like, it really, and again, I've started seeing a therapist, not just over that, because that was, again, I get it. Dogs die. I totally get it.
Yeah.
But it was like a moment where it was under my care.
Yeah.
And it was like, it made it feel like I'm not going to be able to keep things in life together safe that I need to for the people around me or myself.
Yeah.
And that I've always trusted God for that, and that this happened. And I couldn't stop it. I could have stopped it. That's the part that tortures me, you know. But again, it's not, and that's what we talked about, my therapist. Like, it's not the dog. Like, the dog's one part of it.
Yeah, it's like a marker. It's a, yeah.
It's like a, yeah. It ends up, by the way, culmination of a lot of things in my life. There's a lot of things happening there that I can't talk about in the podcast that blew up in my face, whether it be church or career or other things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of good things, too, are happening. But you suddenly go, wow, I've never felt more out of control, even though I've always trusted in God for these things. What else will he not allow to remain safe? It's really where it got for me. Like, what?
Yeah.
So he keeps me so safe on so many things, but not on these. So how can I trust that the next step's not going to be? Remember the old Indiana Jones Last Crusade movie,
right?
Where he's walking across in the
right to get to the Grail,
and he has to pick the right letter, and he's trying to figure out if it was in Latin or if it was in Hebrew or whatever, and he's got to make a jump, and they look the same. The letter he's going to jump on is either going to fall through or it's going to hold. And he has to decide. And that's kind of how it feels for me. Like, whatever I jump to next, this might not hold, you know?
Yeah.
And that feeling of, so kind of refinding, and I do feel like that God is being very patient with me and kind to, like, hey, you're right. Not safe. And yes, that did not go, that particular thing, other things didn't go the way you wanted. And some other things won't either. But you're safe, you know? What is safety? And you start evaluating it. You know, what is it that holds together in life? And are you going to focus the whole energy of this faith experience upon the physical things in life? Or is there a higher cause? You know, you become like this bubble wrapped Christian of, all my prayers are about making sure my kid makes A's, and they're great. Pray about them.
Just like having enough money to insulate yourselves from whatever problem. A problem still may come into my life, but as long as I can write a check, then I'm good. And then that number keeps inflating of how much insulation you need to keep yourself from whatever that problem is. It's like, it's an illusion. That's another thing I think the pandemic took away from us, was that idea of control.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it affected because it was such a global thing. Like, normally you'd be like, oh, gosh, this country's messed up. Then you go, no, Indonesia, Egypt, everywhere. We're all on fire. And so it was like this whole, like, oh, well, they're not handling it well either. What are we going to do? You know, it's like we were all sharing in it.
Yeah. And we will be very careful with our pandemic talk. I would just say this about
pandemic, talk about that. It's a sister podcast that we're going to start.
That, I think for me, that very thing you just mentioned is why I see red flags in the politicization of the pandemic.
Right.
Because it assumes an American-only, American-centric paradigm.
Right.
When what has brought me comfort throughout all of this, no matter whether it was under Trump or Biden, because they've both been president during this crisis, all those things, is that it's not comfort. It's not comfort in someone else's hardship. But to go, y'all know that Australia is having to deal with this, and Canada and Africa. Right. And, like, you know, this is.
And they're all failing and succeeding, catastrophically.
Some are shutting down. Some are going, like, the idea that someone here has to get this right in order for this to be a right or wrong issue, I think overlooks the fact that it's a global thing. And not bring, it brings me comfort there to go, okay, I don't, you know, I'm not going to go to either extreme here and just completely blame one candidate or the other, or one president or the other, or one party or the other. Like, what I'm, when I do that, what I'm probably doing is I'm seeking stability amid the chaos. And
or
I'm
somebody
trying
to blame,
find
like,
it in
it's
the outrage.
Or somebody to blame, too. It's like that thing of, we talked about that before, like party politics. And Jerry Seinfeld talks about, like, if your favorite player goes to another team, like, all of a sudden he's your worst enemy. We're just rooting for laundry at some point.
Yeah.
Like, you could have this, like, think about, we had Pac-Man Jones on the Titans. I mean, if there's ever been a more flawed character person in the NFL, I would defy you to find him.
But when he's returning the kickoffs?
Exactly. You'd be like, Pac-Man Jones, the passion he plays with. You find yourself defending. Right. But if he was not on your team, you'd be like, God, they've let these thugs in the league. Whatever you would say.
Yeah.
I mean, he'd be in a nightclub fight, you know, stabbing people, or whatever. He was in horrible issues off the field all the time. And then, but when he's on your team, you're like, he's saying, he gets in the other players' heads. I like how he's kind of a pest. He's it's like, you can defend it. And when I see party politics, you see it all the time, where it's like, it's always this means to an end. We're just rooting for laundry. Yeah. We're waiting to see if they have a D or an R beside their name before we decide if we're going to get offended at what just happened.
Yeah.
Where, well, whose side is he on? Oh, well, I can't believe. It's like this fake outrage. Right. It's so annoying. We're just fans. It's dumb.
Yeah, it is. And that doesn't mean that you can't be on a side. It just means,
just know that
when,
like,
the side keeps you from hearing,
right,
you know, hearing
from all sides,
right,
it, when it keeps you from having a balanced point of view, or just the main issue that you can do is to ever think that these people really care about you. That's a real, like, I really feel like that's something that we've all fallen into, where we're like, he gets me. No, he doesn't. He does not get you, I promise you. But all that's, but I get you, listener. Sorry, I was trying to figure out a way to segue out of it. We get you.
We get you. We do care. Listen, we're not running for any offices.
And this is the midterms, bro. This is it.
We're not charging any taxes for this podcast.
We're like a purple wave. We want a nice centrist wave.
Yeah.
You know?
We're just here.
We could run. We could be the purple candidates.
You know what I love when people write to us about the podcast? Sometimes they'll say that we've challenged them, and they have opened their minds to, you know, just at least thinking more deeply without just being dismissive of other sides. And we appreciate that. And so
that's exactly, we have you right where we want you.
And that's why
we're forming a super PAC. If you could send your donations,
here's the
to,
deal, guys. We believe that Jesus is coming back in a spaceship next Tuesday.
That's right.
We need you to meet us at the top of the Batman building.
But in the meantime, our GoFundMe is.
No, you really should check out our website, though.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Oh, make sure the podcast is in there.
Almost 200 episodes archived there for you to enjoy. Mm. And so do that. And you can even go to our Patreon page. It's linked there. Kick in a few shekels. Our social media accounts you can follow. Please do that. And that helps people get the word about upcoming shows that I have, which the calendar's kicking up some. So that's really exciting for me for 2022. A lot of more jokes coming around the bend. My dry bar special, I just found out.
Yes.
Ranked in the top 10 of most viewed in 2021.
Unbelievable.
I didn't
even
know.
That's a big, big deal,
I didn't
Johnny.
Know it was a thing, but evidently X amount of millions of people have seen it, and so there you go.
I mean, top 10 dry bar, bro.
That's like, pretty great.
Like, I don't even.
Top 10 viewed, I don't know.
Do you get something for that?
They put it in a video. They put a little clip of it in a video.
But there's no medal or certificate.
We should make a medal.
We're making a medal.
We
for
need
this.
The listeners to make a medal.
Yeah.
Make me a little award, and I'll proudly display.
I am seriously super proud and grateful, man.
It's pretty
That's
great,
amazing.
And I was pretty surprised, and because I'm still
surprised.
Very, very poor. You know, you would think when you hear something like that, oh, this guy must be loaded. Hey,
no, the checks haven't changed at all.
Not at all.
Yeah,
but it is pretty great and gratifying that people are seeing it. So, if you want to know more about where I'm going to be headed in 2022, johnnyw.com. John has a new book, notsoblackandwhitebook.com is where you go to find out about that. You can leave a rating.
Yeah, review or a rating, and our Amazon ratings are going up every day, and we'd love, you know what, I could reach out to our podcast family, Johnny, the family.
We're all a family.
I think
here.
We're at like 87 ratings right now on Amazon. I'd love to reach 100 by next week. So, hey,
okay.
If you haven't rated it, go, and be honest, obviously, but I'd love for you to go and check that out. Maybe even write a review if you've read the book, and we're getting great feedback. We're at 4.7 out of 5 stars on 87 ratings right now.
We'll round it on up to 5 stars.
Yeah, why not? But I mean, people are talking about changing the way that they think and that this is challenging them. So it's exciting. So we also have a podcast interview with Jen Hatmaker on For the Love that comes out on the 26th.
Look at you.
That's a pretty big podcast. And she was great. It was a great interview. I mean, we'll see. I haven't heard it yet, but it seemed
you
like
felt
it
felt like
well.
It went well. They'll edit you down well. Yeah. 30 seconds. Thanks for coming, John.
And it's just like they just pull different words out and make their own sentences. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. So she was awesome and so kind. And so that'll be a fun podcast. So look out for that as well. And, man, don't forget, we are also looking for, someone, who is passionate about this podcast, who may have the time or energy, skill set, interest in helping out with some of our future, sort of curation of content in terms of, YouTube, social media, a few other things that we're working towards. Someone who would, hey, yeah, you love the idea of pouring over podcasts and helping with keywords and helping with clips and audiograms and other things.
Hashtags.
Yeah. If you love that kind of stuff and you're good at that kind of stuff, reach out to me at john@johndriver.com. #JohnDriver. And I always feel weird when I say john@johndriver.com. It's like way too many John Drivers in there.
Yeah, you know? You really like it.
Hi, I'm John Driver. Check me out at john@johndriver.com. You can also follow me at John. It's like, yeah, it's too many.
Mm-mm.
The ego you were talking about.
I had you in mind when I said it. I'm glad it got through.
And listener, we had you in mind when we recorded this podcast. Hey, thanks for listening. We will see you next week on
Talk About That.
I'm Don Hawkins, inviting you to be encouraged with my weekly podcast, Encouragement for You. To subscribe, go to lifeaudio.com.